Tom's not on this, so we can get some ghetto music in.
Oh, forgot. I'm like all out of sorts. I forgot to even set up the mic.
Bass.
Yeah.
Birch.
So, this isn't the most appropriate song, but I just couldn't find a song for an alcoholic. So let's jump right into it. Sergei Kovalev, he stopped Anthony Yard this past weekend. That fight was shown on ESPN Plus to millions and millions of people. And let's just get right into this. Do you think Kovalev looked really bad in this fight, or is Anthony Yard someone who people just didn't give credit to for whatever reason? Probably because he's British. Also, and he looked bad, very bad, for most of his career.
No, it's both. It's both. You know, as I thought, this is probably one of the best ESPN cards I ever saw. Because they sort of let, yeah, not just the card and the fights, but they let, it was just Tim Bradley and Andre Ward commentating. So there was only a couple times where they like sort of worked in, like with the ads or anything about all the whole Top Rank, you know, propaganda. So this is when ESPN, it was probably the most fun commentary. Because, you know, Tim Bradley and Andre Ward, they're both former champions, you know. They got guys who know what shit's going on. And so they'll work this angle. So they're playing up both fighters. And even though Andre Ward has nothing but, he could sit there and shit on Kovalev, he was doing very good commentary on Kovalev. Even though
it's because Max wasn't there to blow him.
Yeah, some
like you do with Roy,
Max boxing writers who might be called Gabriel Montoya didn't get what Andre Ward was saying.
So basically, if you don't get what Fred is talking about,
So this wasn't the one thing. Andre Ward comes out and he says, "Sergey Kovalev is not physically strong, despite his overpowering punching power." Which is a thing that boxers understand.
Now, what did Gabriel Montoya say?
And boxing fans should understand.
And you should.
Gabriel Montoya says, well, knowledgeable boxing fans, Andre Ward, he should know that knowledgeable boxing fans, that means it's meaningless. No, it is fucking not.
He said something along the lines of like, you know, Andre Ward says that Sergey Kovalev isn't strong, yet he got dropped by Kovalev.
Yeah, he
and literally...
Sergey Kovalev's punching power is what Andre Ward is talking about. It is massive. His physical strength is not. And that's what Andre says. When I tried to body him, I could move him. And this is the thing that makes perfect sense. Floyd Mayweather, as of course, because this is the anniversary of Floyd versus Conor McGregor tonight. You know,
we've celebrated already. We're going to keep it going on this podcast.
All night, the guy who made $350 million off of beating up a white dude, Floyd Mayweather, was physically strong. Every single fighter that got into the ring with him, even though Floyd, as he went up to the weight divisions, didn't carry a knockout power, like 135, Floyd's a buzzsaw. Floyd could knock out dudes, you know, drop off a hat. And then they're like, oh, brittle hands this, brittle hands that. No, Floyd was like physically limited. He's only 5'7". He's fighting most of the divisions at 147 welterweight. You look at Sugar Ray Robinson, the perennial best fighter in the history of boxing. And even some of the best guys say, the people who say that never actually watched Sugar Ray Robinson fight. Sugar Ray Robinson's 5'11".
Yeah.
You know, that's when he started at welterweight. That's why he can move to middleweight. You know, Floyd's 5'7" coming up to middleweight or welterweight. I mean, you know, Floyd was physically strong. He wasn't a one punch knockout. He could dominate guys by timing and speed. But when they wanted to tie Floyd up and they wanted to push him around the ring, they were all shocked at how physically strong Floyd was. They could not move him. Shane Mosley, one guy who said that. Shane Mosley's a bit bigger than Floyd.
I'm about to talk about Shane Mosley, actually.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And Shane Mosley tried that. Shane Mosley, when he went to the clinch with Floyd, after he hammered, he hit Floyd with one of the best punches that Floyd's ever been hit in his career. And Floyd tied him up, and Shane was stunned that he could not steer Floyd in that, well, in that
and
clinch.
And you saw Shane couldn't follow up in that round. Story I was going to tell is I have a friend that sparred Shane Mosley. He was one of the sparring partners Shane brought in to prepare for Antonio Margarito. And he said that the one thing that stuck out to him was not his speed, was not his power in terms of punching power. It was the fact that when Shane got close, if Shane wanted him to move, he was moving. There was nothing he could do to keep Shane from moving him around the ring. And Shane, if you've ever, well, definitely because he was involved with Balco, you can tell that that dude had some strength all over. But Shane was a monster at 135. And there are countless guys like this who don't appear to have a ton of punching power, yet they're so effective on the inside. Bernard Hopkins is another one. And Andre Ward isn't known for his power.
No, but he's known for his clinch.
And his inside game. I guess a clinch is one thing, but also the
his inside game. Yeah.
The ability to actually use your strength on the inside is also a skill. And when you combine the two, I mean, Brandon Rios, for you can say what you want about him, that dude is a monster in the clinch. And the same with Chavez Jr. Those guys aren't the most skilled, but they have that power, that strength on the inside. And I mean, it's totally appropriate with Floyd, who didn't have quite the legs that he had in his earlier career, nor the punching power, nor the willingness to sit down on shots and risk breaking his hands. However, if you wanted to get inside on him, like, and what was the game plan? Everybody said, you need to get inside on Floyd. How come nobody was able to successfully do it?
Yeah, because they try to steer him, and they can't. And they go, this guy overpowers you. And so when Andre Ward made that commentary about Kovalev having massive punching power, but when you want to body him, Andre said, he was shocked at how easy it was to steer Kovalev around the ring.
Do you think that's because, like, if you look at Kovalev's physicality, he doesn't really have abs. He's kind of lean, even though he's got tremendous power. He just looks kind of lean, like he's not in the greatest shape. Like,
yeah, well, no, geez, I thought, like I said, I thought this card was the best with ESPN being your remote, because you had some brilliant fighter knowledge coming out. And Andre Ward was one of the best. Like, this is the dude that he had a lot of issues with Kovalev, and some people wanted to bitch about the first fight, but he wasn't. He praised Kovalev so much.
Yeah.
But he still pointed out his flaws. Sergey Kovalev can fucking destroy you with his right hand and punching power. But that's it, and he says, Andre Ward said it, he goes, Eastern Europeans, they don't teach them how to body people.
Yep.
They teach them, especially when you get a guy like Kovalev, he's got a lot of length, he's got a lot of size, like, basically, they want to leverage his punching power. Eastern Europeans are not about physicality, and we saw that, especially with Lomachenko versus Salido. No matter how much HBO want to try to throw out these fouls, this and that, Salido worked Loma because Loma wasn't prepared for this inside game, which is a veteran game, which is a body game. Like, you clinch with me, you throw a shoulder in me, even if we brush shoulders, the steering, it's a huge... It's
the footwork on the inside to be able to plant and know where to push off from, I mean, that's...
This is the exact same reason why Julio Cesar Chavez was genius. The guy, he knew how to cut off a ring. He knew how to work the inside. He wasn't that skilled at range, but he was a legend. If you let him get close to you, he's going to body you. And that's, and so for like, yeah, it was just so stupid. Like that, like not even counting our own, like, hatred of these goof max boxing guys, but to try to say that Andre Ward wasn't giving credit to Kovalev, he gave perfect credit.
No, he really put him over in the, like, the traditional wrestling promo sense, where it's like you have to put your opponent over in order to sell a fight. Now, Ward doesn't have anything to prove. He could go in there and just crap all over Kovalev and call him a quitter and say that he broke him. And I think that's what, if you watch the stuff that Kriegel did, I guess the angle he was going for was that Kovalev was broken from the loss to Andre Ward. But Ward didn't really do that. He really treated him with respect. And I think him and Bradley were both really good. Bernardo Osuna, I'm not the biggest fan of, but I think he does a better job of allowing Ward and Bradley to just kind of banter back and forth, like as experts of what they're seeing in the ring. And that's really what they are. They're experts in the sport of boxing. And you can, obviously, both of them had flaws, Bradley far more than Ward, but that doesn't mean they aren't super intelligent. And like, even Bradley had one line about how in the fight before, in the Makabu Poppin fight, Bradley was like, oh, Poppin is gonna, like, he cannot do this. If you notice, he's got a long background with kickboxing, and he keeps stepping back with his lead foot. He's squaring himself up. He's gonna get caught.
Brilliant insight. Yeah, and you usually don't get that from fighters.
No, it's hard. Like, even Roy Jones struggled to do that stuff.
Yeah, because Roy was, and this is the, everyone dumps on Sugar Ray Leonard, you know, because like he doesn't say a lot, because every Sugar Ray can't get out of his mind that he could beat everybody's ass. Like, Sugar Ray is still in champion mode, and that's what he can't kick out. That's why he's not a good analyst. You know, George Foreman, I liked. I know you didn't really like George Foreman as much, but George Foreman, he almost went too far into praising everybody. You know?
Emmanuel Stewart did that too, but he did it in that grandfatherly way where it's hard to hate him. But he, Emmanuel Stewart loved everybody.
Yeah. But it's all different. But I thought, I think maybe ESPN should just remote Tim Bradley and Andre Ward to every single boxing card.
Don't let
when they're not there,
over them.
Yeah, when they're not in on ringside and some top rank schlub PR person's whispering in their ear.
Yeah,
they were great. I thought this fight was great. Even the undercard was great. And but it's exactly like Tim Bradley says. This guy was a kickboxer, and he goes, I could see the kickboxing stance.
Yeah. You know? And he was totally right. Once he said that, I started to notice it. I was like, oh, yeah, this dude. And I even called it. I told you in the 11th round, I'm like, Poppin's getting stopped here. And he didn't get stopped, but he definitely got dropped. And it looked like he could have, or no, was it the 11th, 10th round? I don't know. It looked like he was about to go.
Yeah, and at 12th, he got knocked down. And if it wasn't for the knockdown, like, I'm not adding up those scorecards. They made no sense to me because I think it was 115, 113,
the judge,
which doesn't.
Oh, wait, no, we're talking about the other fight.
Yeah, no, but Kabu Patton.
Yeah.
And they didn't account for any knockdown or anything, but they called it right because they're like, you're probably not going to win a decision here in Russia against this Russian favorite. But Makabu put in. Like I said, this is the best card Top Rank ever put on, and they kind of had no decision in any of it. So.
I agree. It was really good. And the Kovalev Ward fight was very good. I mean, the big question, because we could talk about Anthony Yard. We could talk about him. And, you know, he's 28 years old. I think there's what do you think? Like, without going too far into this, because there's obviously a much bigger topic to get to around this fight. But do you think Anthony Yard is going to learn from this fight and become a player at 175?
He's 28?
28.
Okay. At 28, maybe not. But I think he can get some good UK fights into him.
Yeah.
If he was 23 at this level, I think you could work him into a champion fighter. No problem. No doubt.
Yeah. If they got him a good trainer, if they brought him over to America, I think there would be a natural transition for this guy to be something.
Okay. 28. Okay. Maybe he's got some spark there. But that's a head change. But
he doesn't have a lot of mileage.
Yeah, I know, but that's the thing. Like, no, I think I didn't know who the fucking guy was. I knew there's a lot of big UK hype behind him. But I didn't think the guy would do as bad as some people thought he would. I thought he'd be in there. Because that's it. Kovalev's old. He's 36.
Kovalev's style's completely changed, too.
Yeah, and that's it. And Kovalev, as Andre Ward says, Kovalev is an outside fighter. He wants to set you up. He wants to drop you with that big right. He's not a hard scramble fighter. He's not a guy who can go like the shoulder to shoulder to butt heads with you and sort of like work on the inside. He's not
even mid-range.
Yeah. He's not. He's an outside fighter. So Yard, I thought it was a great fight. And I thought Yard did a lot better, especially with how goofy his trainer comes off as, you know?
Yeah.
Because he pretty much comes at, off as, what's his name? They'll let him out of the cage, you know, guy.
Who cares?
Yeah. You know, that's what he comes off as. You know?
His name's like Lenny Lane or something. I don't know. One more thing about the commentary. Ward said something that I thought was really interesting. And I didn't see anybody talking about this after, but I could see where people would take issue with what he said. Essentially, he was like, they asked him like, oh, well, who's the best out of the guys at 175? Bivol, Kovalev, Vozdik, Beterbiev. And Ward said, well, they're all Eastern European. They all fight with a similar style. Yeah. They all have similar capabilities. So I don't really know who stands out here. Do you agree with that?
Oh, of course. Of course. Of course. I didn't get this whole... I thought, like I said, again, and I've shit on ESPN commentary a ton, and I thought this is their best thing, their best insight. You had Tim and Andre just going off pure boxing knowledge, no bitterness, no agendas, no nothing. They're just looking at what they're watching remotely, and they're giving honest takes on that.
Yeah, I mean,
and it was great. Because Andre Ward's right. They're all Eastern European. They all got the same kind of outside, out fighting, you know. And like and Andre said it a lot with Kovalev, and we know it. Kovalev's a front runner. You know, this fight, he brought it back. Like, if Yard wouldn't have gassed, you know, in that eighth, what was it, the eighth round, that Yard almost had him out?
Yep.
Yeah, but Yard gassed, and he said that if Yard wouldn't have gassed, Kovalev would have been done.
Oh, for sure. He definitely. He probably would have quit.
Yeah, because you know, Kovalev was fucking. He was 30 seconds away from being finished. That fight being called off. So that's what Andre Ward's saying, because he knows that if you work these guys on the inside, none of them will like it. Beterbiev won't like it. Gvozdik won't like it. Bivol won't like it. These guys want to fight at range. They don't want to mix it up. They don't want a hard scramble. Like, you take Bernard Hopkins, knock 20 years off him, he'll destroy these guys.
Well, I think part of why is because in regards to like Kovalev, but other amateur fighters, when you have a long amateur pedigree, whether it's decorated or not, one thing that you don't frequently see in the amateurs, and it's why it's such a different sport from professional boxing, is body shots.
Yeah. No.
And amateur, they're not used to it.
Amateurs still in a hangover from when they had a scoring era, for when it was like tapping on the face.
I mean, it's still basically like that, but I get what you're saying.
And that's why Cuban fighters are almost like... Daniel Ugas, I like a lot, because he's a guy who will mix it up. As we know, Rigo now is showing his true power.
Rigondo.
Toe-to-toe.
Julio, you know? Cesar Chavez Jr. Jesus. And obviously, but obviously that's a result of the legs going. Same with Lara. Yeah. That has nothing to do.
Like Cubans said, how do we win gold medals to sort of, you know, like brag up Cuba? And that's all they did was tap fighting. You know, like all these Cuban heavyweights or everything, all these legendary Cuban amateurs, most of them would get carved up, you know. Like Arislandi Lara, people kind of shit on him or nothing. He's one of the best Cuban fighters to ever exist in history. You know, that dude throws down and that dude comes in and he fights.
I mean, he's just a perfect combination, and he fights this weekend, interestingly enough, that we're talking about him.
He does. And he's had a lot of shit. He's one guy where you could say he's had a lot of shitty decisions go against him. To the fact that with New Jersey, that Paul Williams case, they suspended all three judges.
Pierre Benoit.
Yeah, all three judges were suspended after they ruled for Paul Williams against Arizona.
I remember watching that fight and just like thinking, this is miserable. Paul Williams is like just, he clearly doesn't have it anymore. And then they read the scorecards. I'm like, what?
Yeah, like the Lara Canelo one, that's, people want to point at that one. I'd say Lara didn't hold in for, if he would have stood in for two more shots on each flurry, he would have had that fight. But he circled the weight too quick. Yeah. And that's what it shows. Because Canelo would throw that body shot. And, of course, just as we know over Golovkin, just as we know with Jacobs, when Canelo throws that body shot, no one wants to stand in there.
I mean,
except for Floyd. And Floyd, because Floyd wouldn't let him get hit to the body. So, you know.
That Lara fight for sure could have gone Lara's way. I mean, even still, without saying he needed to do two more, I say if he lands two more shots per exchange or per round, then he definitively wins that fight without question. But as it stands right now, you can make a case.
Yeah, no, but I say Lara threw that fight away.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like Canelo damn near threw it away too. I think they both threw it away, and Canelo was just lucky that night.
Yeah, Lara could have had that fight. That's not any Vegas judgment or people aren't bullshit about. Lara could have had that fight if he would have just stood and traded a bit more.
I remember scoring that a draw and just feeling gross after the fight. Like, wow, did I really just pay $70 for this?
No, I didn't. I thought it was brilliant, especially Canelo coming after the Floyd loss and saying, okay, I'm going to fight a mover. But Lara could have had it. But then again, that was the first glimpse we saw of Canelo's body power.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I said back then about Canelo, which I still think is true, I spotted this really early in his career, and is that he is a mimic and that he copies his opponents and he's constantly adjusting his game, trying to add the best part of whatever his last opponent offered and utilize that, or what he saw in training camp. You know, you look at the Trout fight and it's like you see Canelo trying to implement head movement that, you know, what Trout was known for. And I think that's why Canelo is so good today, because the dude is constantly evolving. And so, like, here's bringing it back to Anthony Yard, why I don't think that there's much of a future for Yard, or at least this is the case to make, is that I think Anthony Yard at this point is probably a cooked fighter. And I don't mean shot. What I mean by that is, like, he's fully done. We know what we get with Yard.
Yeah, that's what I said. He's 28. Will another trainer really work with him? It can happen. Like, you know, Lennox Lewis, when he got with Manuel Stewart, he was like an older fighter.
Oscar De La Hoya and Floyd Sr.?
Yeah.
Kind of kidding on that one.
I'm not kidding on that, because Oscar says Floyd Sr. is the best trainer he ever had.
But the guy who he had before wasn't any good. That wasn't hard. But also, Floyd Sr. is a good trainer, so, like, it's not... You know, I'm not trying to shit on either of them.
Oscar will still say that Floyd Sr. is the best trainer I ever had, even with all the animosity between, like, with Floyd himself, like Floyd Mayweather. Oscar will still say Floyd Sr. is the best trainer you ever had. And Oscar ran through a lot of trainers. He had a lot of top-ranked trainers. But Floyd Sr.
Like kitchen products.
Oscar's problem was drinking and Coke. That's what it was.
Anything else?
But in his career, you can look at him. Like, Oscar had one of the most beautiful left hooks in boxing history.
Great jab, too.
It is. But his left hook was, like, a thing of legend.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I know people, because it's easy to dump on Oscar, and I love dumping on Oscar, the promoter. But Oscar the fighter, again, the demons caught up to him. And that's it. You can't. And that's why Floyd always succeeded, because Floyd didn't drink. He didn't do drugs, because he saw everybody. Like, come on, this guy grew up in boxing gyms. He saw these guys would follow the same path. You know, they start drinking, they start doing coke, and it's the same thing. You fall apart. You cannot do dope and try to be a boxer.
Tell that to Sergey Kovalev.
Yeah, well, look at Sergey Kovalev. He's struggling with Anthony Yard, a guy he should have been able to 1-2 his way through him.
One last thing before we move on to the big subject. So we talk a lot about the fact that Golovkin really can't throw his right hand anymore, whether that be because his legs are gone or something. I don't know. But
he can't pull the trigger. He can't. And I said that in the second Canelo fight, and no one believed me. But it's coming, and you'll start to see it. That's why he's fighting Steve Rolls.
So, you know, Kovalev's right hand wasn't really a thing on Saturday night.
Yeah. And that's
same thing.
Kovalev's right hand is his entire game plan.
All right. Well, let's get off of that subject. Let's talk about only 20 something minutes have passed, and now we're going to fully bring up.
I like his right hand. I like Kovalev's right hand.
Okay. Well, he doesn't really like it that much, because he ain't throwing it with any conviction.
No. His right hand was the thing of beauty. And I remember watching him when Main Events had him on Epics or whatever.
When he was killing Gabriel Campillo.
Yes. Yes. And Freddie Roach was doing the color commentary.
Oh, it was him and Dan. Wasn't it Chris Mannix too?
Yes.
Oh my God. Imagine that trio. I think that was the three.
Yeah. And Freddie was the most well-spoken out of all. So that's the thing. So Kovalev back then, his right hand is a thing of beauty. Like Kovalev is a great, great boxer. And that was the funniest thing because even on the sub, when UK fans are still hyped on Nathan Cleverley, and I was laughing. I'm saying you guys have. Yeah. Oh, yes. This is way back because they're still pushing Nathan Cleverley. And I said, you guys have no idea what's coming at you. Yeah, Kovalev gets in with it. He cleverly just blows him apart. You know,
I remember
he was,
those NBC fights.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Kovalev was a really underground fighter. You know, but I always thought Stevenson would have blown apart. Well, he's weak against the left hook.
I mean, did you see what Stevenson did to Badu Jack? Or no? Yeah. He's the one who hurt Badu Jack to the body, right?
Yeah. Like Stevenson, that left hand of his, like a way better than Kovalev's right.
It was just a laser. It was the closest thing that you could compare it to was Manny Pacquiao's left when Pacquiao was just shooting it like a jab.
Yeah. So that people want to say that fight, but it would have went Stevenson's way, you know, and that's why Kovalev, they dropped their belt, you know, for the money for HBO, which doesn't exist anymore.
So let's talk about Canelo. So, I mean, who do you think would cower more from Canelo's body shots? Sergey Kovalev or Gennady Golovkin?
Both of them. and this fight showed why. See, the rematch with Golovkin is like, I can't see why people didn't see that. Like, you turn to a jab fighter. Like, you can't score points. And then I remember Ioli and all these other guys going, I'm puzzled why Golovkin didn't try to go to the body because he didn't want any fucking thing to do with Canelo's body shots. That was evident in the first fight. Like, and you saw with Danny Jacobs even. When Canelo hits to the body, these guys are seriously going, I'm getting the fuck out of here. You know? And like, even Ray Mancini on the weekend card, the FS1 card, he goes, doesn't anyone train to the body anymore? But Canelos are different. These are old pros. These are old guys who take the medicine balls to the body. And Canelo doesn't. He rips to the body like nobody. And that's why they wanted Kovalev, because they know Kovalev's got the length, but he can't fight inside. And his jab's a lot slower than it was. So Canelo can hammer him to the body. And even at Kovalev's height, the shorter guy at that point is problems with him. Because he's used to fighting sort of like on a, you know, like a parallel jab of punching down in his old age sort of becomes trouble, you know, because old, like he doesn't have a strong left. His left's the setup. The right's the power shot, but he can't. He can only throw from distance. So, yeah, Canelo knew that. That's why I think it's not a Golden Boy fight that they didn't want Kovalev. I think Canelo wanted Kovalev. Because he knows if I can get that guy to the body, he's going to collapse. And with Canelo's body shots, he will, despite the crazy weight difference. When Canelo hits you to the body, like he's crumpling dudes.
Well, so one of us has got to say it.
Yeah.
Sergey Kovalev has no shot against Canelo.
Yeah.
And I see people on Twitter talking about how, this is ridiculous. Kovalev, you know, they're releasing lines and Kovalev's at about like plus 300 against Canelo. They're like, oh, you got to lay money on this. I mean, are people watching the fights? Sergey Kovalev is done. I don't think he would last more than 8 or 9 rounds against Canelo.
Yeah, but he's got a shot because he's a fucking light heavyweight.
I understand that, but I also know that Canelo's got an iron chin.
I know we say that, but he's still a light heavyweight. Like, this isn't like some completely washed fighter.
You sure?
Wash is a light heavyweight. Wash is a light heavyweight fighting a middleweight. It's a completely different fucking story.
Although
Nonito Donaire somehow found himself in the WBSS finals.
Yeah, stranger things have happened, for sure. I do not think that Kovalev has a shot against Canelo. I think.
I think, as Andre Ward said, all his bad years are starting to catch up to him, and that's what we saw.
And I think Canelo's the kind of opportunist that sees that. Canelo's not stupid.
Like, and that's the thing. Canelo, before Floyd couldn't do this fight. Canelo after Floyd, he could do this fight.
No, I think you look at the fight that he had against Trout, Mayweather, and against Lara. He learned so much in those three fights on how to fight responsibly.
Yeah, that was Canelo's whole thing. He was only effective within a two-step range. Canelo had the plant, and that's the only way he felt comfortable throwing anything, you know. But ever since that, he's grown up and he can fight on the move. He can fight on the back foot. He can fight split, you know, like circling. Like, yeah, he knows it. Yeah. So, I'm not going to say Kovalev has no chance, but I see Canelo willing to fight, which is fucking insane. The guy's a fucking midget. He's like 5 foot fucking eight. You know, he's a middleweight, and he's saying, I want to fight the light heavyweight belt holder. And people still want to shit talk him. I've seen guys on the Twitterverse going, he's cherry picking. The fuck you cherry pick a light heavyweight when you're middleweight?
It's like that whole argument about Mikey was ducking Lomachenko by moving up to fight Spence. It's like, dude. He's fighting a welterweight.
Fucking Loma, I love him. But he got fucked up by that one dude who was at...
Pedraza?
Yeah, Pedraza. He's getting bruised up by Pedraza.
Yeah, he did kind of get battered by... not battered in the sense like he got tagged.
Loma's trying to move up and he's getting cut by dudes because he's fighting reckless. And it's like, Mikey doesn't fight fucking reckless.
You know who doesn't fight reckless? Canelo.
Yeah. Canelo doesn't fight reckless at all now.
I really don't see like how Kovalev could. I just don't see how he could. How he could last against Canelo. Canelo's gonna rip him to the body. He's gonna throw with power. Canelo's gonna get inside, and we just went over the fact that Kovalev doesn't like fighting on the inside. Doesn't even like fighting mid range.
Yeah.
So if Canelo gets past his jab, which is a tough, you know, that's gonna be tough. Kovalev's jab is still excellent.
It's not what it used to be, though.
It's still pretty damn good. I mean, I'm not saying that he's the best guy at light heavyweight, but I'm saying it's pretty damn good.
Yeah. Like I said, hey, I'm trying to give Kovalev a chance, but I see Canelo slipping that jab, no problem. He can slip that. Because if Anthony Yard can start getting into the body, it's not a matter of height. It's a matter of will. And we know Canelo has fucking more will than fucking most of these boxers out here.
Yeah. So
it's not going to be a Rocky Fielding fight. You know,
I think that it will not be a Rocky Fielding fight, but it'll end the same way.
Yeah, I think if Canelo slips that jab, Kovalev is so vulnerable because he has no mid range. He has no inside game.
He has nothing. So
he's not even good at clinching. He's not even good at clinching.
He's good at landing right hands.
Oh, yeah. No, fitness models. Like I said, Kovalev's brilliant. But like Andre Ward called that all right. And that's not that Gabriel Montoya tweet is just so stupid and everybody else. Andre Ward called that fair. You know, he could have easily shit on fucking Kovalev because he knocked him out and he beat him, you know. He came back from being knocked out, you know. But Andre Ward called that fight fair.
Now, you know, we heard today that at least Mike Coppinger reported, although he might change his mind four times between the time that we finish recording and the time we wake up tomorrow morning.
Sources say,
according to Mike Coppinger, that Kovalev is saying no to the November 2nd date, which has been slotted for Canelo's return, saying that the fight was a little tougher than they anticipated and they would literally only have 1 week to recover before starting training camp again in order to fight November 2nd. You think this is an indication that maybe Kovalev knows basically what we've been talking about or that he wants to enjoy himself?
This is the problem with a guy like Kovalev, you know, because he gets like shit cuts because he's got like 7,000 managers, you know. So even on his big fights, he's only getting 25% of the purse. And then he fights in Russia, and he gets that reaction from Russia at the best Russian stadium name ever, the Tractor Sport Palace.
Yeah, it's a good one.
You can't get a more communist era Tractor Sport Palace, you know. Sounds like a factory. So maybe that's what's kind of hit him. You know, he's like, ooh, I could just fucking hang out and fight in Russia. You know?
There's not too many people left that I think he could convince to go over to Russia.
No, but I'm saying he could just sit there and fight Russia, and he could sort of ditch all his U.S. promoters and everything.
So like he all got all main events in ESPN and or not yeah, ESPN, yeah, but Top yeah, Rank.
Yeah, yeah, you know, like main events, especially even though what's her name there, Duva, she was old chair and everything. I think he got a taste of what it's like to be a champion fighter there for Russia. It only took him like 20 fights, but they've tried to work him in Vegas. They tried to work him in Atlantic City. They tried to work him in Montreal.
They even put him in the Playboy Mansion.
I know they skipped this poor bastard all over the country, and this is the first time.
Poor bastard is putting it a little lightly, you know.
But I'm saying poor bastard is like this guy put his time in, you know. Everything else,
he's going to put some time somewhere else, and probably that's in a jail.
Yeah, come on, no one ever went to jail for. Floyd's the only guy who, like, does time on a misdemeanor assault charge.
And Kovalev's being charged on something a little higher than misdemeanor.
But they'll plead down. They always plead down. It'll always plead. Mm-hmm. They're not exactly pushing. Mm-hmm. It's almost it's over a year since the initial charge, and they keep pushing it off.
Yeah, because that's because Chris Mannix is on the case trying to report. Lost in the courthouse.
Chris Mannix, I was waiting for confirmation.
It's like, okay. Have you ever heard of Pacer?
Yeah, no, you know.
Literally request anything.
That was what's weird is that Kathy Duva still has that kind of friendship and power for over these writers that they wouldn't go after Kovalev. You know,
maybe they're scared Kovalev will just show up at their house and steal their phone.
Because Kathy. Well, that's why he came back against Yard. I said that in the chat. I said someone said Yard on his phone. But all that, like I'm saying, this is the hero's welcome and the hero's response that Kovalev has been searching for pretty much his entire career, you know. So that might be why he's like, oh, no, I need extra time. But then again, here's the thing. Like, Kathy Duva has nobody else except Kovalev. Nobody, you know.
You are right.
Gift. Like main events was her husband. Her husband built up main events. Brilliant guy, brilliant insight, brilliant fighting. Like, he developed a lot of pay-per-view. You know, he developed boxing insight. He signed up all those 84 Olympians. And main events has been coasting ever since he died. You know, they have been coasting on friendships from that era on the New York boxing scene ever since then. So that's why she wants to milk Kovalev. But this fight, I don't know. Yeah, so now they want to try to – they want to up, you know, because the thing is, like, Canelo will fight him. But then it becomes, well, what's Golden Boy offering? Because Canelo, we know, is getting $35 million. So that's where this weird Dazen thing comes in. Because that's all Golden Boy and Dazen. Canelo's not paying the opponent. Like, he doesn't give two fucks.
Well, Canelo's, I think that's why he got mad initially, is because they were trying to take from his purse to give Kovalev.
Yeah, exactly. As which they tried to do against Triple G, too. And like I said, again, this is why Al Haymon is a beloved figure in managing. Because he's like, no, these guys can't do this. They can't do it legally. He's like, fuck them. This is your money. And you said, boxing is such a weird place that these boxers will not believe it. You look at Vonis Matarosian, where he goes, I'm going to Don King. He says, come on, Don. Let's show everyone they're wrong. What does Don King do? He fucks Vaz Marosian.
He gets him to basically, if we're to believe his, if we're to read between the lines of his tweet, basically threw the fight against Golovkin.
Yeah.
And it's, well, like, wow, Don King, fight, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, they're throwing the fights a little bit crazy, but
I'm just reading between the lines.
Because like he got like $500,000 or something, he ended up with like less than $200,000. Don King took like,
well, you know, Don King's got to get his.
Yeah, and so that was it, and then like, because people they were waiting in the boxing scene, boxing world, they're waiting. Oh, Vannis, he left Al Haymon. Oh, let's see how it turns out. Vannis is saying, "Oh, I'm sorry, Al. I don't know why I left you."
So what you're trying to say is Al Haymon actually does his job as a manager, in which he works against the network and the promoter to extract money from them that rightfully should go to the fighters?
Yes. See, that's the world after the Ali Act came in. Promoters are supposed to be nothing but event promoters. This idea that they sign guys to exclusive contracts and guide their careers, that's pre-Ali Act. It's all bullshit. All this nonsense about Al Haymon's in violation of the Ali Act. The only way as Al Haymon, who was a legally registered manager, could be in violation of the Ali Act was if he had a special arrangement with the promoter to take the money and keep it from the boxer. But Al doesn't. Al takes his cuts from the boxer's purse. And sometimes he doesn't even take that. Or sometimes he has limits. You know, he doesn't. This is the world. But see, the promoters are scared of this shit because they don't want everyone to know that, no, things changed after the Ali Act. They kept trying to pretend that things didn't. So this idea that promoters are supposed to have control over fighters' careers, no, that's a manager's. The promoters aren't supposed to be able to pick opponents. Everything is the manager's call or the boxer himself is representing himself. Promoters are dudes who put on the show, they put up the ring, and they either take a fee or they think, I can make some more money if you let me negotiate these contracts. Otherwise, no. Everything they do, Al Haymon is giving them a flat fee, is exactly how the Ali Act is supposed to work. It's supposed to be fighters running their careers with a manager or on their own. And most of them will pick Al Haymon because that dude's smarter than any of these.
Well, I mean, we'll just jump around on the rundown here. Let's just jump right into the UFC stuff. So there's this antitrust lawsuit that's going on. And if you remember, the Golden Boy, with their pretty poorly conceived lawsuit against Haymon and the investors in PBC, he sued them. Golden Boy sued them for a violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act, which essentially is like they accused them of forming a monopoly or taking actions that would form a monopoly. So now the UFC has found themselves in a lawsuit. Now, who is the one who's actually suing the UFC here? Because
it's a couple fighters. Like, there used to be a bigger number of fighters, but they sort of dropped some guys out because they had different conflicts of interest or anything. So the actual plaintiff, I can't remember who was specifically the fighter that's left, but it's an antitrust lawsuit. It's not like all the act. They have no all the act protection as MMA fighters. So it's an antitrust, and it's not a monopoly claim. It's a term called a monopsony, which means that even though there are multiple players in the market, one player has an enormous amount of influence on the entire market. You know, because a monopoly means there's only one person you can go to. But with the UFC, they can say, well, there's Bellator, so that means there's not a monopoly because there's a second player. But even after Bellator got their DAZN deal, UFC controls 91% of all the money in MMA in US, and over globally they probably control over 80-85% of all the money in MMA. So that's where they're called a monopsony. So they can set all the pay scales. Everyone else has to sort of follow their wake. And this antitrust thing is pretty hilarious. You know, like I even went back to writing and I wrote about this, how, and now it's coming out, even though people who followed the UFC sort of knew these things were going on, but they fucking like blackmailed fighters. The whole thing about sponsorships, they knew fighters would lose 40 to 50% of the money they were making. And the UFC saw that as a positive because they wanted their fighters fucking broke and dependent on the UFC. You know, so all these angles, these guys are really, really shitty fucking human beings.
Well, let's quantify that. So fighter revenue is, it was rumored to be around, or it's not rumored actually. They said it was about 26% in the lawsuit. Or in
2007.
So 26% of all revenue generated went to the fighters.
Okay. So now, I'll say though, in 2007, for the competition, Pride was the big thing in Japan, even though about 2007, Pride was starting to weaken. But you go back to 2004, Pride was bigger than the UFC. It was much bigger. It was Japanese fighters. Their heavyweight division made the UFC look like jokes and everything. And that's kind of the UFC sort of put these backdoor deals in with Chuck Liddell and Matt Hughes to not sign with Pride because they were their two biggest stars. So that's why they had these sort of jobs for life of being consultants with the UFC. Once Endeavor took it over, they fired them both, which is kind of like weird. But so these guys, they saved the UFC for there for not being overrun. You had IFL, you had all the, everyone else sort of saw the money because there was no regulation. It was not like boxing. It's like even wider open. You can pay your fighters a shit ton less than what boxing was and you can get in. So 2007, UFC sort of had to pay these guys a bit more. They're still getting fuck all for wages. You know, like Randy Couture, when he saw the Oscar De La Hoya versus Floyd Mayweather fight, and he saw that Floyd Mayweather made $20 million as the B-side to this $2.5 million fight. Even before that, Floyd made over $10 million fighting the guy who beat Zab Judah.
Baldemir,
yes. Floyd got $10 million for Baldemir, and that thing sold about 400,000 pay-per-view-wise. Randy Couture was selling 500,000, 400,000 to 500,000 pay-per-views as a headliner. So when he said, it makes me kind of question my pay, the Fertittas went on this big press junket about saying how Randy Couture was greedy because his total pay was $1.5 million. And of course, because most of the fans of the UFC are a bunch of broke fucking trailer punk. So they go, 1.5. That's ridiculous. He's being fucking greedy. The guy sold fucking 500,000 pay-per-views. And like he's saying, Floyd made $10 million fucking dollars. He wasn't asking for $10 million. All he said in public was, that makes you kind of think. Because I'm not getting paid comparable. So that's what the UFC, they've always had a whole handle on these fucking guys. And as these antitrust goes on, more of the depositions show just exactly how fucking little they gave two fucks about their fighters. They pretty much knew they had them over a barrel, and they could fuck them at any time they wanted.
So we frequently talked about how the UFC, or sorry, not the UFC, but in boxing, generally around 70% or higher is what the percentage of the revenue goes to the fighters. And that may even be higher in some cases. Now
it's 70 to 90.
Right now. So back in 2007, when they did this whole study or whatever, they found that in 2007, it was 26% in the UFC. Bellator, 44.7. Strikeforce, 63.
Yeah.
Right now in 2019, that number sits at below 20% for the UFC in terms of revenue that gets brought in that actually goes to the fighters.
Yeah, and it's about 18% that works out to on various things because also the UFC takes a cut of marketing. Certain fighters
do they get a cut of the sponsorship money too?
Yeah, it's at 80-20%. Well, and now it's all sponsorship through Reebok, you know, and everything. Everything right. goes through UFC. Like, they had a whole sponsorship tax. When fighters had their own sponsorship groups, like I said, that was the whole thing about initializing a sponsorship tax. They raised the sponsorship tax money so much that no one could afford it. And so all these fighters lost all these sponsors. Like I said, their pay decreased on the side money, like, you know, 40 to 50%. So the biggest thing about today is that there are three guys who are sort of following this: Paul Gift, on Twitter, he's called MMA Analytics. John Nash, he's called at Hey Not the Face, and Jason Cruz at A Dilettante. They've been following this antitrust case. So today they went into the actual courtroom. So you get to see a lot more displays. These are the things when they put them on paper, the federal documents, they will actually retract a lot of shit. Well, in the courtroom, they will actually see more. And the one big thing that they had today, that Floyd Mayweather, in his 9 pay-per-view fights from 2011 to 2017, just from the estimated money he made from fighting, was more than the combined total from every single UFC fighter from 2010 to 2017.
Floyd was a longer period of time.
Yes, a longer period of time. And almost 400 events, not just the pay-per-view. Every single fucking event that the UFC's put on. Floyd, they estimated at $638 million just from the fighting.
Which is conservative.
And the UFC was $627 million from 9 fucking pay-per-view fights. So this whole thing of where they go, we pay our guys better. One fucking boxer, and I loved it because I've been saying this for years. One boxer, Floyd, the top boxer, beat the entire fucking company. For revenue.
I mean, Canelo and Manny Pacquiao combined probably have earned, and you might need to throw Miguel Cotto in there too, but those three fighters probably exceeded the UFC pay in that time frame.
Yeah. Manny's the number two revenue generator, number two pay-per-view fighter in history. So he'd be pretty close.
It's ridiculous. And they're estimated to earn $980 million next year. And they're also estimated to only pay, of that $980 million, $196 for fighters.
Yes. Yeah, see, they did a whole projection on their future revenue. And their revenue has grown 50%.
And fighter pay is dropping?
When the Fertitta sold it, the revenue was about $600 million or something around there. So they're projecting revenue to get to almost $1 billion. Fighter pay is not going to grow.
But don't forget that Bob Arum, they've tried to string Top Rank into this.
Because they wanted to do some kind of, I think it's because Bob got his foot involved in that Golden Boy antitrust thing. So Golden Boy's expert is sort of the plaintiff's expert on this one. And there's a big convoluted thing where Top Rank was sort of...
Dietz?
A singer.
Okay. Because Dietz is a moron.
Yeah, Dietz is just crazy. Because he was trying to spread that out as if Canelo wasn't bringing in all the money. Oh, no. People were signing up for, the fucking first undercard fighter. That brought in $200,000 for Golden Boy. Yeah, so it's this singer. I can't remember. I knew this a while ago because this happened a couple of years ago that Top Rank was getting hooked in because they wanted to do comparable boxing numbers. And Top Rank's like, leave us the fuck out of this.
They're like, redact that part, please.
Nothing to do with a federal case. And that's why they bailed on the Mikey Garcia challenge. As soon as they knew they couldn't get Mikey Garcia's case dismissed, they said, okay, let's end it. They don't want any judge ruling on any part of their business. A federal judge, they don't.
That could legitimately, and the reason why is, that could bring the whole industry down.
Yeah, because you have now an established ruling from a federal judge. It's pretty much a shortcut for every other challenge, And that's the big thing. That's what's so crazy why this antitrust lawsuit against UFC has gone on so long. This is almost a decade in the works, this fucking lawsuit.
Well, the lawyer said they've put 5,000 hours into researching.
Yeah. And it's not, the plaintiffs aren't the smartest fucking lawyers they got here. They've made a lot of mistakes and a lot of sloppy paperwork because they're just pretty much a low-level challenge case on this. But the UFC hasn't been able to beat them, and they've got fucking the top-end lawyers on this shit, and they can't get this fucking thing dismissed. And the damages, if it completes... You're pretty much talking, it could wipe out the entire book value that they bought the USC for. You're talking damages because they get triple the damages if they're found to be in fault. You're talking the penalties could be like over $5 billion.
But what state are they suing in? Because like damages is...
Nevada. It's Nevada federal court.
So, it's federal.
Yeah, so they got it. See, this is why boxers get that leverage, because boxers can always take it to the federal level.
Correct.
Federal judges are appointed for life. They don't give two fucks about state politics, about who elects them, about any party loyalties. Once you're a federal judge, unless you want to think you can go to the like, Supreme Court, which most of them don't, they know they don't want to play the game. They have no worries about this case. So that was the biggest thing with the Ollie Act, is that it gave boxers the ability to elevate a Kate course to the federal level. Because state courts, those are the guys who have to get elected every year. A lot of times, like in Nevada, they're appointed, you know, so they're vulnerable. If you want to piss off the big businessmen in the state, and this is the big thing too, like Don King, that's where he had his footprint. This is why it's in the Ollie Act, because Don King's in Florida, and he had so many ties, not with just their athletic commission, plus the federal judges or the state judges there. Don King was all up in their business. So that's why I said they can't get a fair ruling. So the Ollie Act, you could take this ruling and move it to another jurisdiction. Even though the MMA fighters don't have that kind of case, they were able to get this transferred to a federal court because it's an antitrust lawsuit. It's not a contract dispute. They elevated it to an antitrust issue.
You think this opens the door for Golden Boy to take over MMA?
Yes. Yes, because as we saw with Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz 3. That was just a sign that Oscar was shitting his pants, that he had no outlet deal, you know, because everyone was beating on Canelo. No one wanted fucking Golden Boy. So that's why he put on that fucking fight, because he's like, oh my God, I'm going to have to fucking pull a rabbit out of this fucking hat.
You know? Hey, it was profitable.
Yeah, but then once he signed the deal, Oscar's like, who gives a fuck about this?
Yeah, that was done real quick.
Yeah, once he got his days in money, he's like, ah, fuck this. The guy wouldn't even show up for fucking Canelo's fights. Fuck this.
He just reappeared recently. I don't know where they dried him out, or I don't know where they dried him out from, but like he was back in the picture.
Was it? Was it one of those Thursday night fights? Because it's in Hollywood. So
what?
Close. Yeah.
I guess he was at a party.
Yeah, but if he goes to the one of those Thursday night fights, it's only like 10 minutes away from his house. So they might be able to wake him up out of his coke binge or whatever he's on to get him down there.
Well, I mean, speaking of Canelo, Gennady Golovkin's going to be fighting Sergey Derevyanchenko. And so here's something from Mike Coppinger's article that I want to read to you.
Yeah, cool.
With an emphatic victory over Derevyanchenko, Golovkin can increase interest in another Canelo fight, but it will be up to the Mexican star if he'll grant Dazen's wish. It's unclear at this time. It's unclear at this time if Canelo will give in, but with Dazen paying him $350 million over 10 fights, he'll be hard-pressed to avoid the trilogy with a rousing performance from Golovkin this fall.
What happened to Dazen has complete control? Canelo has no choices. So many things. It's so crazy when Canelo goes and dials up a lawyer that everyone's changing their fucking tune.
It's also funny that we've heard this twice now. We heard it that Andy Ruiz has no leverage. We heard that Dazen has say over Canelo's opponents. What is really going on over there? And are the things we're hearing coming from Mannix, coming from Coppinger, is this what Dazen is saying? Is this what Eddie Hearn is telling them? Or is this what actually is the fact? Because the fact is, if we look at what's happened, Andy Ruiz had a lot of leverage. And how do we know? He got a different deal.
Andy Ruiz has no leverage. Everything is signed for the rematch. He has absolutely no say in the matter, according to Chris Mannix and Mike Coppinger. And then the same ones who broke Andy Ruiz negotiating a new contract. And the best thing was that Coppinger says Andy Ruiz has now agreed for more money. And he wrote a big article on the exact same fucking day that Matchroom was suing Andy Ruiz.
Yeah, it's like, come on, guys, get it together. And with that, it's like, Ruiz negotiated, or I mean, he didn't negotiate, but the people he has negotiating for him, Al Heyman, negotiated a higher pay from Dazen and also the Mexican TV rights.
Yeah, like, well, I'm not going to believe a single fucking thing coming out of The Athletic with this thing. You know, because like, Coppinger's been so wrong so many fucking times. He throws like 8,000. He's like a psychic. He throws out 8,000 possibilities, and then they go, oh, look at Mike Coppinger. He was right. You know, that dude is just trying to get his Athletic subs. That's all he's trying to do. Like, you go back 2 years ago, Mike Coppinger didn't have a fucking thing to say about boxing at all. He's a guy who says, I won't even report guaranteed purses because that's not all the money they make. Well, that's nothing to do with guaranteed purses. Guaranteed purse is the money they make that night.
A guaranteed purse is a guaranteed purse. It has...
If you're fighting a fucking pay-per-view, the money doesn't come in for fucking 3 months. So, of course, you're not going to pay a guy $40 million fucking dollars on the night because you have to have that in fucking hand.
And the only person you're going to have that in hand for is a Floyd Mayweather where that money's guaranteed to come in.
Floyd's his own promoter. Floyd can write himself a check for $32 million fucking dollars. If he doesn't have the money, well, what is it? Floyd going to sue himself? No fucking curse, Dot.
How funny do you think it is that Al Heyman had his fingerprints all over this fight, negotiating on behalf of Sergey Derevyanchenko along with Keith Connolly?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Well, like, he's an advisor, so we never know truly what's going on. I thought it was kind of shitty that Derevyanchenko is in play for Canelo. And then they're saying, well, Derevyanchenko can get the same money for Golovkin. Well, the only people who can say that they would guarantee that money in this world is DAZN. So essentially, they're working against their own fucking signed boxer. So I thought that was kind of weird.
Well, they've got money that's just burning a hole through their pocket.
Yeah, but the only one who could tell them that they're going to pay the exact same money, no matter who Derevyanchenko fights, is the outlet they're fighting on. Like, this is not pay-per-view. Well,
the people signing the check.
Exactly. It's not pay-per-view. You can't go to another outlet. You can't go to another promoter. So that was kind of fucking weird on my end because I thought, well, how the fuck do you negotiate in good faith then if your own outlet's trying to fuck you over?
That is...
And that's what's so weird about the DAZN deal with Canelo. They're acting like fucking forum hood rats. They hate fucking Canelo. It's like, how the fuck do you sign the biggest fighter in boxing and then talk to him like he's a piece of shit, you know? That's Canelo's big problem.
We've only approved two opponents.
Yeah, then he gets a lawyer and suddenly it becomes seven.
And if that lawyer starts sending over documents, because he's like, from what we know, no documents, no legal proceedings have begun. Canelo just has a lawyer that he's made a phone call to and that it's been made public. That's all we know.
Yeah.
And they suddenly
went to the step where he's like, I'm not going to trust my promoter anymore. I am now getting legal counsel, and suddenly he's got seven opponents to choose. The dumbest thing was all these writers and all these people going, oh, Dazen's got a good contract. They get to choose this. It's, no. If you sign to a guy to a contract in the Ollie Act over 12 months, guess what? As a broadcaster, you're treated exactly the same as a fucking promoter, and you cannot force a fight. And then when you sign Golovkin, that means he's got nothing but fucking recourse to break all the fucking contracts he signed to. You know, it's just like, how the fucking dumb are you guys?
Also, if they would have gotten in the way of that Derevyanchenko fight for Canelo, now they have another problem on their hands because you can't get in the way of sanctioning mandatory opponents.
Yeah.
Which is a whole other can of worms. But of course, we've been saying this for over a year now that nobody at Dazen seems to have read the Ali Act and understand that a lot of what they're doing is definitely in a gray area, if not on the other side of
it's
illegal.
Not a gray area. See, with the Ali Act, it's always if the boxer wants to pursue the case.
Well,
it's not like there's like the Ali Act police force waiting to spring on people.
Wait,
which a lot of boxers try to say.
This is news to Golden Boy.
It's of course, Golden Boy. It's an established law for the boxers to take advantage of. It's a fighter protection law. You know? Like, it's not like there's an enforcement arm to this. This is legal recourse for boxers if they want to pursue these cases.
And most fighters are scared to do that because of what you possibly lose out on in terms of years off of your career trying to fight this battle.
Just because it takes like usually 2 years for any federal case to be heard. because there's like a shortage of federal judges and shortage of getting on the dockets and everything. And this has been going on since probably the 90s. They've had shortages of federal judges just because, you know, Senates are like fucking, they always like piss around about who they're appointing. And they get appointed a ton of guys, but there's just shortage of judges, you know. They don't want to pay for the judicial branch of the government. So it's far bigger than boxing. Because once you put on the federal docket, they get in fairly quick, but you're still looking at 2 years, you know, like just like Mikey Garcia. It took him 2 years to get his case through.
Do you think that as a, do you agree with me, at least, that I've said in the past that Golovkin has the worst contract in boxing and certainly in all of sports? Do you agree with that?
What's your angle? Because him getting $50 million when he can't draw like fucking flies to shit. Pretty good.
Well, I mean, from Dazen's perspective, I mean, when you look at a streaming service who's trying to get off the ground, and while they do have a lot of money that they can burn, it could best be served possibly throwing that money, $100 million, at, say, a Jermall Charlo or someone like that. They've thrown it at Golovkin, who's 37 years old, who's already been beaten by Canelo. And very likely there's not as much interest anymore in the fight rematch with Canelo as anyone really thinks who keeps saying that fight is out there as the fight that Dazen needs to make. I mean, he looked...
They're still arguing that fight from a perspective from a pay-per-view.
What do you mean specifically about that?
Because they argue this about how much money this can bring in. It could only bring in that as if it was a pay-per-view. You can't bring in that with the zone, as they've shown.
Well,
you're getting less viewers. You're not increasing your size. You're basically just going to get, you're offering a pay-per-view for a third of the price now.
Is it a third? I think it's actually a quarter. $20 and a pay-per-view here is about 80, 70 to 80 bucks.
75, you know.
So roughly around there. So it's in that ballpark, you know, 25-30%.
Golovkin's contract, from his perspective, is one of the greatest contracts in the history of boxing.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Like, from signing as a broadcaster. Oh yeah, broadcaster. You got to be fucking retarded.
Well,
you're paying this guy who, like I said, his best gate was Danny Jacobs at $3 million at Madison Square Gardens, his supposed home base, and that was, what, less than 200,000 pay-per-view buys?
Yeah, it was 175, I believe. 170.
Yeah, and now you're paying him $50 million. You're giving Sergey...
No, it's not 50. It's 100.
No, what I'm saying, you're paying him $50 million per fight. I'm saying for this Dariushenko fight. So now you're outlaying $21 million fucking dollars for two guys that no one gives a fuck about, you know.
I would say he's probably getting paid 17 to 18 million.
I don't think
it's over 100 million. They said over 100 million for six fights.
Yeah, so, but they sort of fucking juiced that. I think his top pay could be over 100 million. I think he didn't get that much for Steve Rolls. I think he got like 10 to 12.
He got 14.
Yeah, but some, they bullshit so much.
I know that, but I'm just like, let's just say what they're saying. This is 14 million.
Either way, okay.
I have a theory about it.
Yeah, the 15, 16, it doesn't matter. You're paying over $20 million fucking dollars for Golovkin versus Dariushenko. Bob Arum might give you fucking $1.5 million for this fucking fight. HBO would only give you fucking less than $2 million.
They would, $1.5 million and $700,000.
Yeah. You know, and these guys are paying $20 million plus.
They wouldn't even make this money on pay-per-view.
No, they wouldn't. You know, it's just fucking madness. But on some level, see, and now if it was Showtime, everyone would be circling the fucking wagons saying Showtime's fucking crazy. They're going to go bankrupt, even though Showtime makes $500 million of profit every quarter, which... And people think, oh, they're spending on Deontay Wilder, they're going to get bust. Fuck off, dudes.
Showtime, you know, is fastly approaching HBO.
Yeah. They make a shitload of money.
And they're owned by Viacom.
Well, see, this is the only thing is that when they were owned by CBS and Les Moonves, if that dude went a little, sort of like got his handsy with chicks,
Sergey Kovalev would like it if you put it that way with his his behavior.
Fuck, I'll take his defense. Fuck, I'll get some of that fucking cash he's getting. You know, you see, Viacom used to own CBS, and then they broke up, and CBS really did a lot better without Viacom because Viacom's kind of the dumb era. They're the MTV retards, you know.
Well, Viacom is just going after such strange demographics, but they make sense, you know. They've got Nickelodeon, they've got like certain key demographics. It's just that they bombard them with terrible programming.
Yeah, and that's it. And CBS was really, really smart program. They made a shitload of money.
They got the old people.
Yeah, it was old, young, doesn't fucking matter. They're making money, you know, whoever pays. So that's the one thing where people think Showtime is. But it's not like they're going to come in and fucking try to sell Nickelodeon on Showtime or something.
Well, no. But it's like if Showtime's not going to go bankrupt because of boxing is my point. Like,
well, this is the thing. Yeah, DAZN, even though they've wiped off all their financial information ever since they sold their sports betting wing, they're losing like $700 million fucking dollars a year. And then people are like, Showtime can't afford Deontay Wilder. They're making $500 million a fucking quarter.
And they have the potential to just toss a pay-per-view on. If they get Wilder Ortiz if they got Wilder Ruiz, which they're not, but if they did, it's like, oh, well.
Like, even when it becomes the ESPN, a lot of these costs are nothing but advertising. And when people think it's like a finite amount of money, oh, we're losing money. Well, they spend fucking money on advertising. That's how they view a lot of these fights. Like, you know, like, we know ESPN's got like the top ranks put on a lot of shitty fights, but whatever, it's just advertising. They would spend this much money if they were promoting fucking, you know, Get Up in the morning, you know. So this whole idea that these guys all put you boxing program, you're losing something. It's like, fucking come on, guys. Well, all the shit's on the internet. Like
in Fox's case and in ESPN, they are putting advertising on their own programming. So like, yeah, they're not paying for extra for advertising.
Yeah.
And they already have such an enormous reach that it's like, this is basically free for us.
And that's why Fox is going fucking insane with boxing. That's why they're hammering Showtime so much, even though Showtime's supposed to have this PBC deal. But it's because Fox, they were paying $200 million for UFC, no control, no say in the pay-per-view. Now they're paying $60 million for PBC. They get a cut of the fucking pay-per-view. They get to put these guys on. They're fucking going insane. They're like, hey, give us more fucking fighters, you know? Because they got $140 million and the advertising hasn't dropped because their fucking ratings are pretty much the same fucking thing they were doing when they were paying $200 million and compared to what they're paying $60 million.
Didn't the UFC want like 400 or 500 million in their negotiation with Fox to get re-upped?
Yeah, and then their apologist said, well, everyone bids up, and then they really wanted 350 million. No. They wanted 450 million so the fucking regulators wouldn't bust their balls on the fucking funding. Yeah, and they wanted that, and Fox said to them, we'll give you exactly what we're paying now. And that's an alarm bell. When Fox was in control for 7 years, they know exactly what fan base is being brought in. Fox has all their fucking apps so they can get the off-app revenue. You know, they know all this. And they're saying the UFC, you're not worth $350 to $400 million.
Well,
but then ESPN's like, boom, let's jump in because ESPN, they've got a bigger kingdom to try to fucking prop up. You know, because they're losing so much from the fucking the cable channels cutting, you know, like every person that cuts a cable channel, ESPN loses over $7. You know, Fox Sports only gets $150 from those fucking fees. You know, like, and you're talking ESPN had the cable networks by such the balls. They were paying ESPN $7 even if people didn't sign up for ESPN.
Correct.
Like, your basic, when you ordered the advanced cable package, ESPN got $7 out of that, no matter if they had ESPN or not. And Fox isn't in that world. They only get $1.50 if people order carriage the rights. Fox sports package. Yeah. You know, the carriage rights. ESPN was getting non-carriage rights. So as they lose subs, that's a major fucking blow to them, you know. And so they're trying to prop it up with these apps and everything. And even the new ESPN guy goes, I don't see apps as her future. Which is
Jimmy Pitaro, the president of ESPN, he said, we're not seeing the conversion to streaming happening anytime within the next 10 years. Our plan is full speed ahead on our cable satellite channel.
It's just like Uber. These Silicon Valley guys they can make a lot of money if everyone converts to streaming. And so they say, yeah, that's the future. That's the future. That's the future. And people are still traditional.
And also, like, people who convert to streaming aren't interested in, like, well, not that they're not interested, but you can't count on them to watch live, which is what everyone wants. They want live.
Yeah, live sports will always still be the king. It'll waver, it'll dip, it'll grow. It's all those are things you can't judge on what's going on. You know, it always comes and goes.
Let's see. Anything else we need to get to here?
The Joshua rematch.
Yeah, so that's gonna happen for sure now. But I mean, we touched on it a little bit. Anything else you want to say? You know where the leverage went?
Money, you know, and that's the thing. And like, Matchroom might want to try to sue. That's their court case.
They've taken it back. They said that they took it back.
Oh, did they kill the lawsuit?
Yeah, they already took it back. I guess they had a deadline where they said, if you don't sign up, take our deal, we're going to file a lawsuit. Possibly that's what happened.
Oh, okay. So that's what they were. So they probably cut for more money. There's no way that I believe Coppinger's idea that Ruiz held out for $2 million fucking more. There's no way that Eddie Hearn's out there trumpeting, I got $40 million for a fucking site fee, and Ruiz only gets what, 5% of that?
Like, so I actually think, first of all, it wasn't two, because, and unless it's possible that Coppinger's like changed the story, but I've seen that the latest article said that Ruiz was due to make $9
million. No, but on his rematch, they said he was going to make $8 million.
The point I'm making is that it's inconsistent with what these people are saying.
That's what I'm saying. There's no way that he would say, I'm cool with Saudi Arabia, if he's not getting a major fucking chunk of that money.
I'm scanning through the article. Okay, so it says here it was set to make $8 million.
But that's what I'm saying. The article's bullshit. This is the Coppinger's fucking insanity. He's just trying to get subs for The Athletic, you know. So he wants to say he's the guy in the know, and he retweets every single fucking thing that comes down his passage. You know? We make fun of Dan Raphael a lot, but Dan has a filter on his end. You know, even he knows that 90% of the shit he gets fed is bullshit, and he won't retweet. You know?
Well, I mean, he did tweet that Crawford is going to be fighting Kavalauskas and in New York, and the undercard will feature Michael Conlan. What was the other fight that he said?
That's just ESPN. They're talking.
Yeah, obviously he definitely is in the know there because they're feeding it to him. But no pun intended.
Even Ioli goofed on Coppinger because he's like, yeah, I get the same tweets from the promoter.
Comey and Teofimo Lopez.
No, but like Coppinger will fucking throw out every single fucking thing, and then he's writing articles on this. And he's the same fucking jerk-off who said Eddie Ruiz has to take whatever fucking, Eddie Hearn gives him. Fuck off. You can't go, I'm getting $100 million for this fight, and the boxers don't get a cent. It's like, fuck off. Come on. You're dealing with Al fucking Heyman here.
So what do you think? So this card is. So I said that this card could have been pay per view, but they want to air this card on basically build off the lead in from the Heisman Trophy ceremony, which is like whatever. And Crawford in the main event, they want to put Michael Conlan against either Isaac Dogbe or Genesis Cervania, two guys that'll probably beat him. And Teofimo Lopez and Richard Comey also on the card. And of course, this card will go head to head with Jarrett Hurd and Julian Williams, the rematch?
Yeah, well, it's not so much they're choosing that. It's more that everyone's running out of dates. So I saw some tweets about that. Why does boxing do this? Well, fucking come on. You should have be able to record this shit anyway.
ESPN basically, like, Top Rank doesn't have a ton of leverage with ESPN because they just have to give them, or they just have to take what they're given. They haven't gotten a lot of ESPN dates this year. Well,
this is what's so weird. Like, I remember this had to be, what, 2-3 years ago when the Heisman ceremony actually pushed back the Lomachenko fight by, like, fucking 2 hours.
And people got very upset?
Yeah. No, well, people didn't give a shit. It's like the Heisman ceremony took fucking precedence. And we're like, yeah, well, that's what you get when you're fighting on fucking ESPN. Football's always going to take over. So, no, I saw a report where they're going like, well, this is the traditional night where they want to pair it. I'm like, yeah, well, traditionally, boxing gets fucked. You know,
traditionally, ESPN boxing's too. Not on ESPN.
Like, I remember that night, they were like, what, on ESPN 3, then ESPN 2, then they jumped back to ESPN 3, and then they finally on ESPN for the main fucking event, like an hour and a half or something later. You know, like, that's what you get. So I can pretty much guarantee that Fox isn't going to be running around the fucking Hurd and fucking J-Rock rematch. You know, it's going to be on time.
Well, the one thing that sucks is that Terrence Crawford is going to get he's going to have competition on his fight night again. Last time he fought, Danny Garcia fought on the same night. And now this time, that was on the same night that he had that pay-per-view, I guess, with Amir Khan. And now he'll go against the Jarrett Hurd Julian Williams fight, which was a candidate for fight of the year so far this year.
Yeah, but everyone tells me that Spence Crawford's the fight that everyone wants to make because Crawford has so many fans.
Well, you know? It'll be so easy to make that argument.
Shouldn't be a thing. This is the thing in boxing, but everyone goes, "Well, it's competition, whatever." Well, boxing has different fucking fan bases. That's why Floyd Mayweather was the biggest fucking boxer in history. And everyone else sucked dick. You know, like, don't give me this fucking boxing. They aren't the same fucking fans. You know, boxing is so much bigger than people want to give it credit for. You know, like, look at the UK. You got a guy like Dillian White, you know, even before his fucking, you know, ped test or whatever. He's a fucking pay-per-view fighter over there. No one in America gives two fucks about Dillian White.
Are you sure? Eddie Hearn does not agree with that.
No, like, you might get maybe 10, 20,000 people, but Dillian White's a massive star. And that's what, so people go, they all think, well, here's Crawford. And they go, well, he's got competition. Well, if the Crawford fans are so big, they won't give two fucks about J-Rock and Hurd. But everyone knows it's bullshit. You know, he can't compete with that because his fan base isn't that big.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the thing. Floyd fucking, he's the biggest fighter ever. And they go, that's because they want to see him lose. No, because he's popular. People like Floyd. He's fucking getting entertaining. That's why fucking Cotto could never headline a fucking card in his life.
Are you saying that his fights with Margarito weren't because he's so charming? What, and
375 or something, I think the Margarito fight did. That was his peak.
Yep.
Yeah. Good fight. Impressive performance, but as a B-side, he's a big carry-on. But as an A-side, no one gives a fuck.
No, he is.
He's like talking to a wall.
Cotto's a great example of a great B-side fighter.
Really a B-side, yeah. B-side.
But like that B-side against a legit A-side does over a million buys. You saw it with he did over a million with Pacquiao and Mayweather.
And Mayweather, yeah.
And
because it's a good B-side, because people go, oh,
I think Cotto, it was 900 with Canelo.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Great B-side, but he's a B-side fighter. He's not an A-side. You
know? I think the real concern, like, if you're like, oh, you know, they're counter-programming or whatever, I think the real concern there is the fact that Terrence Crawford's fighting Kavalauskas, which no matter how you slice it, there's no way to sell this fight. It's hard to say his name. It's hard to spell his name.
He's the greatest pound-for-pound fighter
from Lithuania.
Beat up on a bunch of dudes who are not from America. Except for a guy with one leg.
Whoa. What, I mean, what about Nonito Donaire?
Yeah, well, you know how I feel about Nonito Donaire.
Donaire's days are numbered, that's for sure.
Okay, anyways, a half inch shorter than Tank. And where's Tank fighting at? 130? One going to 135?
Yeah.
Anyways, well,
but Inoue apparently is the best, the biggest pound for pound puncher in boxing.
Yes, better than Wilder, I heard.
Yeah.
He's the greatest puncher in the boxing history, and he fights at 118.
Yeah, it's almost like in Inoue's last fight, he hit a guy, and the guy just did not get up whatsoever.
Fucking Johnny Tapia fought at 118. He was high half his fucking career.
So
brilliant
what?
Fighter. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. He's a brilliant fighter, but he's fucking high at 118.
Mi vida loca.
Yeah, mi vida loca.
All right, well, I think we should wrap it up here.
I'd like to really wrap it up. I like this one.
I mean, ready. It's late, you know? We could keep going all night long. We could talk about Dana White looking at this lawsuit against the UFC and then looking at what Floyd's made and saying, huh, you know what? Maybe I do want to get into boxing.
I think that's all we have to say about the whole UFC paper scale where Dana says the boxing model is broken and then we have one fighter making more money than fucking the entire UFC. So what's broken about it? That Dana White can't make a bunch of fucking money.
That the promoters aren't getting paid. That's what he's saying. Yeah. The promoters aren't getting paid.
Yeah, I wrote about it in the article. The very thing about the Al Haymon model, which scares everyone, is that these there are, let's say, minority boxers that are making a lot of money and control their own careers. And this is what he's going to run straight into. Even Bob Arum said it in that Boxing Scene article. He's like, the Ali Act will cripple Dana if he even thinks of running UFC style fucking promotion of boxing. He just can't, because like he was even saying before, I'm gonna do it without the belts, without sanctioning bodies. Like, well, right there, you're violating federal fucking acts.
Yeah,
you can't make your own belts in boxing.
I mean, no one's gonna sanction that belt or that title fight. Yeah, so good luck
by an outside party.
Good luck.
And then again, like I said, I did in that article about this whole myth, and UFC has been really, really good on the myths about how they created this whole fucking scene, best versus the best, and that's bullshit. But let's remember that one of the best MMA fighters in history, and Demetrius Johnson, was traded like a slave contract to a Japanese promotion. It was. They traded him.
I mean, you could also say he was traded like, you know, an athlete in another sport, which is uncommon in combat sports.
It's completely fucking uncommon because the UFC's never traded anybody. But they basically took this dude and traded his contract, and he's one of the best skilled fighters ever because they couldn't fucking promote him. Because he's too small. No one gives a fuck about a 125-pound dude, you know? And he's a great guy. He's a fucking friendly guy. Very upstanding dude. And they did pay-per-views a couple times. They tried, but they only went like 125, 150. But then Dana's like, I can promote anybody. And then they go, oh, what about Demetrius Johnson? Well, that's his fault. he's one of the most skilled fighters ever. Like, the dude's a fucking, he's just a genius in the fucking, you know, cage. And then they're like, oh, yeah, I'll come to boxing. We'll do best versus the best one. Bunch of old fucking punch drunk fucking Frankie Edgar types drunks. Like, come on.
Hey, man, that was a great fight.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it was.
People really enjoyed it.
You're watching more MMA than I am right now.
I don't know, man.
Shit. You watched that Cyborg versus that fucking housewife fight.
That was terrible. And like,
I didn't even watch
you know
that.
Something like I got a long message and I had a back and forth with this guy who messaged me about the podcast. He's like, I'd love to hear you guys talk about the UFC. And I said, yeah, maybe I'll ask Fred some questions, but like, I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm a major UFC fan or I even know what I'm talking about. I know my lanes and like, I can't really speak on UFC. And when I watch it, I don't understand enough of like what's happening to like form opinions that would be informed at least. And he's like, no, you know, you do a good job at boxing. So like, I think you could make it work for UFC. And I'm like, okay.
No, because they're bad and you can't judge it because they're all bad. Here's the thing from Jeremy Snowden, who is one of the original, seriously original MMA writers. He also got blacklisted from the UFC.
Why?
And he said this. He says the UFC promotion has been so in-depth about this best versus best that fans can't even tell what's a good fight anymore.
Yeah.
They defend everything. They every card stacked in their mindset because this is what the UFC has told them. So now you got a whole new generation of kids that just come up with these memes that is best versus the best, and they're stacked, and they'll just keep saying that just because they recognize the names. That's all it is. And that's what boxing tries to say, this shit. Oh, champions, like I said in an article, Conor McGregor and like Chris Mannix and fucking Dana White, well, Conor McGregor will fight anybody. Conor McGregor's entire fucking MMA career has never defended his belt once. You know, never once. And then they're saying, oh, boxing guys, they don't get challenged. What the fuck, they get challenged all the fucking times. You know, you'll see on Errol Spence's career record where he supposedly fought nobody. You don't see a lot of repeat names. Go to the UFC. You see the same fucking guys fighting each other all the fucking time.
Well, the problem is that they don't have a pool.
Yeah, they have nobody. You know, like I said, welterweight boxing, you got 2,000, over 2,000 active welterweight boxers. And you only see probably 50, which is it's almost the same as the UFC complete fighting pool.
Right.
Welterweight, they might have 50 to 90 in some of their most deep divisions. And you don't see all 50 fucking guys.
Well, because a lot of those guys are fighting on like Contender, whatever their TV show.
Yeah.
And it's like they're like 0-2.
Yeah. Like there are more active welterweight professional boxers than there are MMA professional fighters in male and females. So don't give me this bullshit that, oh, it's best versus the best. No, there's a bunch of fucking jabronis you fucking know the names of.
Yeah, and I've made that point for a long time about boxing, where boxing fans talk a lot about what they do and don't want to see, but like what it boils down to, I jokingly put Alfredo Angulo versus Peter Quillin as the main topic to discuss it today, but the reality is there's a part of me that's not joking because I think a lot of boxing fans they actually just want to see names. They don't want to see actual best guys fighting the best. And what is my evidence?
Yeah, no.
My evidence is that if you look at ratings, the ratings between two recognizable names always crush the ratings featuring two highly talented guys. It is without fail. And that is because the majority of boxing fans are casuals and they use popularity to determine skill rather than skill. And then
I'm a bit different mind. I think the casuals are more accepting to unnamed fights than the hardcores.
Really?
You look at the number for fucking the Kawanaki.
Okay.
Versus what's his name?
Ariola.
Ariola.
Ariola is a recognizable name. Kawanaki's on the way up.
Not for casuals anymore.
I don't know. He Ariola fought Klitschko. He fought Wilder.
He fucking fought Klitschko like a fucking decade ago.
I know, and he cried.
Exactly. He's not a casual pull name. I see. That's where I see PBC succeeding. They had Jamal James versus that other dude that everyone who was a supposed hardcore fan would have said that's a showcase fight for Jamal James. And that was a tooth and nail fucking fight. Yeah, Antonio DeMarco. Well, because DeMarco's washed up. He can't fight worth fuck all. You know, that's the hardcore, you know, supposed fan base take on it. That was a brilliant fight. They sold that fucking fight. It got good ratings, you know. So I think Fox. That's why I like Fox, is because they're turning this whole idea on its head. They're putting on fights and they're telling everyone, "Come for the fights," you know. And they don't. Like I said, fucking this whole UFC is supposed to be best versus the best. So you got Daniel Cormier versus Stipe Miocic. It did fuck all.
Well, you know, I mean,
no one gives two fucks about that fight.
The ESPN pay-per-views have been generally terrible in boxing and MMA.
Yeah, because they lost a whole support of broadcasters. You can't fucking cut out broadcasters because they contributed so fucking much that people don't realize. But, you know, yes, you know, Endeavor wants to go public, so they're trying to fucking just shore up cheap money.
So they're trying to lower pay-per-view buys and revenue and so that they could somehow convince people to buy their stock?
Yeah. You know.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's not like the fighters are getting any cut of that. Only the defending fucking champion gets any pay-per-view money.
Yeah.
Challengers don't get pay-per-view money.
But
no one gets it. You know, it's like
Derevyanchenko is going to make more than Daniel Cormier made against
Yeah, that's fucking bizarre. Yeah.
The heavyweight champion of the UFC. And the old and the new one, neither guy will make more than Sergey Derevyanchenko. You might add up their purses, and it may not be what Sergey Derevyanchenko is going to get paid.
You can take two UFC pay-per-view cards for disclosed purses. And this is the thing. There's not a lot of hidden money in the UFC. That's it. Only the defending champions get pay-per-view bonuses, and those were really, really shitty cuts. They're like less than 10% of the fee.
Well, they got a win, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. So Derevyanchenko as a B-side is going to make a lot more money than most UFC fighters ever will. Yeah. Which is that, and that's why boxing is. Boxing contracts have minimums. They don't have fucking maximums.
Yeah, well, Floyd Mayweather made that much clear.
Yeah, it's always up for fucking money. How much money? And that's it. Like I said, yeah, a lot of boxers will not make a lot of money, but that's because they can't fucking draw. And that's it. That's the thing about boxing. You could draw, you negotiate for more money. And that's the fucking boxing is. You know, it's combat sports. There's no fucking, it's not fucking a guaranteed wage. You know, it's a blue collar living. You know, you get what you fucking fight for.
Well, we will wrap it up there. This has been, I mean, we only had a few topics to talk about and we just went all over the place. Yeah, but that's what happens on a Monday night. Yeah. We don't have Tom on to, not answer the questions that were being asked.
I told you I was at the bar, so it was coming in hot. So.
Yeah, you came in hot. hopefully you remember the stuff you say when you go back and listen to this one.
Oh, this one? No, I'm not gonna fucking regret this. I never listened to my own shit. I couldn't stand my own fucking viewpoints.
You know, it it took me probably like 80 episodes for me to be able to comfortably listen back to the podcast.
Yeah,
you know, before I would do it with like through gritted teeth because of, like, you know, listening to myself again, listening to the takes and listening to things that I missed out.
You get too overly critical, and that's why I don't listen, because I'll start to think, oh, I'm just a jerk off and shut my mouth. But
tomorrow I'll be driving and I'll just be like, why didn't I say this? Yeah, or like, this would have helped Fred argument. Why didn't I say this? It's just,
well, we're not produced. We got no money. We got no fucking backing. We're for fans by fans. So, you know, that's what our deal is.
Yeah, that's pretty appropriate. I mean, we have money. We just spend it on coke.
Yeah, and coke and hookers. Like we got the fucking Oscar de la Hoya package.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks a lot. If you want more content, of course, go over to patreon.com. Since we are in the trunk production, you could support that way. Also, I mean, if you don't want to do that, just share the podcast any way you can. Mm-hmm. That works. Also, go check out Fred's article on sundaypuncher.com. I have one coming this week. Fred's article is hilarious and just real biting in a criticism of Dana White's plan to get into boxing and all the contradictory things surrounding that. It truly is a must-read article. Unless you've actually spoken with Fred, then you have heard, like I have, these things over the years. But finally it just bubbled up enough that you actually were like, you know what, I need to put pen to paper.
And you think I'm a pontificating asshole, dude.
Either
way, check it out.
And I definitely look forward to seeing more and hearing more about the UFC lawsuit. We'll try to cover that, obviously. You know, I guess Fred knows a lot more about the UFC, and yeah, I watch some UFC, but I'm nowhere near an expert. However, we can definitely translate the business aspect of that and how that may relate to boxing. So thanks for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed this one, and we will be back in a few days with, you know, we're not going to do a preview for Lomachenko. I mean, what is a preview? Lomachenko is going to jack up Luke Campbell. That's the preview there.
Well, yeah, but you just hate fucking Lomachenko.
That doesn't mean I don't respect him or know he's good.
No,
like, I don't have
to
like him.
Respect him or know he's good. You just hate him.
I just said he's going to jack Luke Campbell up. Like, what? There's no other outcome for this one. Luke Campbell's going to be made to look like a jabroni in front of
hopefully
all of his British countrymen.
Yeah.
And by the end of the fight, they're going to be booing him and cheering for Lomachenko.
Hopefully.
I mean, actually, that's real interesting. Do you think Lomachenko gets cheered on his ring walk?
I think he will. I think he's got enough fans out there. Look at when Deontay Wilder goes over to UK. They fucking love that guy.
Yeah, but Deontay Wilder is, I mean, we're not comparing Deontay Wilder and Vasily Lomachenko, are we?
I think
one guy's got charisma and the other guy punches a ball strapped to a string in his head.
Luke Campbell's no Ted Cheeseman. It's not like he is this huge fan.
Dude, Luke Campbell was on like Skating with the Stars or something in the UK. He was a big star.
I just wanted to work my boy Ted Cheeseman in there.
He's coming back soon against Scott Fitzgerald.
Of course, Zedline, Dazen's best fighter. He's got more fights than Tevin Farmer.
This year? I don't think so. Tevin Farmer's trying to break the record. Tevin Farmer's out there fighting with the work rate of one of those guys in Thailand
Sugar
who fights
Ray
at the swap
on
meet.
His fucking bump tours. Fighting guys in carnival sideshows.
I mean, Tevin Farmer's trying to build a record like Srisakit Sarungvisai.
He's trying to percentage chance lower that loss record amount on his career.
I mean, if he fights long enough, you know, it'll go to page two on BoxRec.
Yeah, 50 more wins, and then all the losses will be pushed out. Eddie's got enough deep stable. He's got some dudes that are, you know, Romania he's going to put him up against next.
What happens first? Tevin Farmer gets to 40 wins, or he gets beat by Gervonta Davis?
Probably 40 wins, because he has nothing to do with Davis.
I don't think he's going to beat JoJo Diaz.
Neither do I, but I haven't seen JoJo Diaz in a long time.
I was right. Luke Campbell was on a celebrity show about ice skating.
Definitely Loma's gonna get
booed. Oh, this is sad. I just found an article. Dancing on Ice 2013 final. Luke Campbell first to leave the show. He was the underdog going into the final. And boxer Luke went home first. He looks devastated.
Shit to find in Canada, like fucking ice skating, you know? Oh, God.
It's a massive TV night with the Dancing on Ice final. Read our live blog here. As well, Crufts crowning their top dog on Channel 4. New idea for a TV show?
You should cut this part off and make this the daily pod, because they're always asking, where's our daily? And will this be Luke Campbell's performance on the fucking ice capades?
Fair enough.
Just imagine if Loma doesn't fucking fuck him up. He lost to a dude who got voted off on the ice skating show.
If Lomachenko loses, we have to do a live. We have to download all these episodes of Skating on Ice with Luke Campbell and just review them.
Yeah. This would be like the time I finally bet on Chocolatito and he got his ass beat.
That was not smart. I mean, it was obvious he was going to get beat at some point in the near future. Did you also bet on Shinsuke Yamanaka when he got smoked by Luis Neri? All right. We may cut that part out.
Thanks, guys.
we need to wrap this up. Thanks for listening. We will be back soon.